The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Morning, people, look round for my shoes. You know I had those mean old walking blues. Woke up this morning, look round for my shoes. Yeah, yeah. You know I had those mean old walking blues. You know some people tell me where blues ain't bad. Worst old feeling child ever had. People tell me, well, the blues ain't bad. Yeah, it's the worst old feeling, woo, child I ever had. Yeah, the brooks run to the ocean.
Third and final hour of the Jimmy Sangenberger Show here on News Talk 710 KNUS. Had to get to the guitar solo on this fun, thumping tune by the great harmonica player, actually, Paul Butterfield. New Walkin' Blues as we continue. News Talk 710 KNUS. Good to be with you. Best bumper music known to man more than 7 years running. Such a pleasure and a privilege. Second episode of the year 2021. And amidst all the things that we are seeing going on across the country, I mean, there's so much chaos. There's so many different issues of concern regarding the elections. We've talked about that a lot in the show up to this point. But there are many other issues of concern that we see. And one of them is the judiciary and how the judiciary conducts itself, not just at the federal level. You know, a lot of people have concerns about the Supreme Court and the appeals courts and other federal courts. But also, when we're talking here in Colorado, I mean, think about all the poor decisions that the Colorado Supreme Court has made, upholding things that are just blatantly and flagrantly unconstitutional in so many areas. It's unfortunate when that happens. But it's not even just the Supreme Court of Colorado. It's often judges and how they conduct themselves. Imagine a situation where you have a trial that's going on. There's no jury. It's not a jury trial. Judge is hearing the case. Judge is supposed to make the ruling. You have a trial. Goes on for 4 weeks, and then you wait for a ruling. You're still waiting for that ruling. You're still waiting to find out what in the world is going on. Let's say it's October of 2017. You have a 4 week trial before a judge, and you get nearly 2.5 years later to January of 2020, and you still don't have a decision from that judge, and your business or your private not-for-profit educational establishment has been caught up in limbo this whole time. So you figure, hey, I'm going to go ahead and put in a complaint with the Colorado Commission on Judicial Discipline because something's up here and this isn't right. We're not getting an answer. We should get an answer. And then lo and behold, a decision is finally rendered several months after that on what just so happens to be the same day as that particular judge is reprimanded. That's exactly what happened in the saga of College America, which is a private, not-for-profit college offering alternative education that is owned, operated by the Center for Excellence in Higher Education. It's a nonprofit corporation that oversees several higher ed institutions, including College America. This is what happened here in Colorado in 2017 and then to 2020 last summer. John Caldera wrote about this in Colorado Politics, a really great piece last weekend, Our Judges Undercover Above the Law. And I wanted to spend a little bit of time talking about this topic with Eric Julin, who is the CEO of the Center for Excellence in Higher Education. And he joins me now here on the Jimmy Sangenberger Show. Eric, welcome to the Jimmy Sangenberger Show on 710 KNUS. It's good to have you.
Jimmy, thanks for having me. I appreciate you taking the time to talk about this travesty.
Well, you know, when I look at the judiciary, first of all, I want an actual process that, like we expect, is speedy. And ideally, it's public with not just the outcome, but also if a judge is reprimanded. And here you have the judge reprimanded, but we don't know exactly what it was about. So I just gave a little bit of an outline. Tell us if I got it right and if there's anything else that we need to know about what I described.
Yeah, no, you got it right. I mean, we, you know, this action began back in 2012, where the Colorado Attorney General had gone after a couple of other colleges and received large financial settlements to kind of make it go away. And when they came to our College America that had been operating there in Colorado since 1961, the colleges had been servicing students and educating students. And our students are very non-traditional. You know, we're not taking students right out of high school. We take students who are older, who are working, and really need to get a college degree in a specific area so that they can change their lives, make more money, get a better job, and benefit their families. So, you know, when the Colorado Attorney General, you know, started investigating our schools, we looked at all the material that they found and said, you know, we disagree with your conclusions. We don't think we've done anything wrong. And then after 4 or 5 years of more investigation and litigation, we finally went to trial, as you said, in October of 2017. And once that trial was over, we expected, you know, a relatively quick decision. And after a year that went by, we kept working with the court, trying to find out why we hadn't gotten a decision. After the second year was over, we still went back to the court and tried to make a plea with the Attorney General's office to the court to issue a decision. But ultimately, after 2.5 years, we were at our wit's end and didn't know what else to do. So we did file a complaint with the Colorado Commission on Judicial Discipline, and they spent 3 different meetings reviewing the judge's failure to issue a decision. And then, as you said, at 4:30 in the morning, on the day that they were scheduled to review the judge again in August, the judge pushed out a decision, which was, you know, pathetic. We analyzed the decision and found out that the judge virtually copied 85% of the draft decision that the Colorado AG prepared. So the judge didn't rule. The judge didn't examine the evidence. The judge didn't do what they're supposed to do, and was ultimately reprimanded by the Commission on Judicial Discipline. And that's all we've been able to find out. We don't know what the reprimand was. We don't know what it was specifically for, or any of the materials that were reviewed and considered, because it's just a black box.
So one thing that, as I studied up a little bit and considered these issues involved, one thing that is just so puzzling is if it took, look, we're talking October 2017 and finally in August of 2020, almost 3 full years later, you finally get a decision. It's puzzling to me why the judge wouldn't have more originality in that ruling. It does seem like he realized, okay, a decision on a reprimand is going to be rendered. I need to get this in before they have their final meeting and tell me exactly what's going on in terms of their decision on the commission. So then you're thinking, okay, how much time did he actually spend on this in that 3-year period? Any guesses?
Well, it's interesting that you bring that up, because we have had some motions and legal activity following the decision. And in one of those, we had an oral hearing. And at the very end of the hearing, surprisingly, the judge went into a narrative about his delay and came right out on the record and said, well, I really didn't, you know, start taking significant chunks of time to work on this until 2019. and, you know, tried to explain away the unconscionable, in my opinion, delay. But I think your assessment is right along the lines of what our assessment is, that when you look at the decision that came out and the fact that it was virtually a copy of what had been prepared as a draft by the Attorney General, you know, I don't see any evidence where the judge did the right job, evaluated the witnesses, evaluated the evidence, and really wrestled with a decision. It looks on the surface that it was just simply a decision that was pushed out at the last minute because he was under scrutiny and review by this review commission.
Again, we're talking with Eric Julin, who is Chief Executive Officer of the Center for Excellence in Higher Education, which is a nonprofit corporation that owns, among a few other educational institutions, College America. So let's talk about the implications of this decision. See, that's the thing, is that I know that there were accreditation issues that came up for a College America in the aftermath of the judge's decision last summer, including criticisms directly of yourself as well as the founder of the Center for Excellence in Higher Education. And so that's where this gets interesting, is that, look, the judge took so much time to finally make a decision, and it seemed that it only came about when it did because of this reprimand that was about to happen. I mean, that's the only reason why it would be. August 21st is when they're going to be doing the reprimand, which is private, by the way, and the judge finally reaches this decision. And that's where I think a lot of people reasonably can scratch their head saying, what's going on here? And then, like, there is a justification for you guys to be concerned and say, what happened here? Why? What are the underlying bases? Especially when decisions were reached as a result of what this judge ruled on that conspicuous day.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, and the people who really are suffering from this, I think, are two folks. It's the citizens of Colorado, because they've now lost an additional opportunity for higher education. As I mentioned, College America had been operating, you know, very successfully in Colorado since 1961. And once this trial occurred, and then the ongoing delay, you know, it had a huge impact on the colleges. And we ultimately had to make a decision to stop enrolling new students in College America back in September of 2019. You know, after 2 years of no decision, the colleges were just so, you know, negatively impacted. And then ultimately, the colleges, we finished teaching out our students and closed the colleges in September of 2020. So those three colleges that had been there in that state serving hundreds and hundreds of students who needed an alternative for, you know, a non-traditional higher education. You know, most of our students were working adults, single mothers, minority populations who just candidly didn't have the ability to go to a traditional, you know, great university and spend 4 days a week for 4 years to get their bachelor's degree. They could come to one of our colleges and get a very career-specific focused degree and graduate and earn their bachelor's degree in 3 years. And, you know, the graduation rates of these colleges were almost double compared to the community colleges in the state of Colorado. And I'm not saying anything bad against community colleges. They serve a very valuable purpose. But, you know, in today's society, you need a state that has an education system that can be tailored to every single consumer's needs, whether it's a traditional four-year university, a community college, or a very specific nonprofit career college. And that's now gone because of this unconscionable delay that occurred in this whole trial and litigation. And, you know, if you boil it all down, there was one central issue in our lawsuit, and that was that our colleges were advertising, and in some of the advertisements, we included data about the Bureau of Labor Statistics on earnings for different careers and different areas where we had programs. And during our trial, we presented to the judge that of all the colleges in the state of Colorado, every single one of them, except for two institutions, had the exact same kind of Bureau of Labor Statistics data in their advertising, because colleges are wanting to communicate the value of a college degree. And it's been proven with the data across this country that, you know, people with more education typically are going to earn more over their lifetimes. But in our case, the judge concluded that that was somehow misleading, even though every other college in the state of Colorado was using the same kind of national statistics and wage data. But for us, it was somehow wrong and inappropriate.
Well, and we could have another discussion, of course, on the lawsuit specifics and some of the other claims that have been alleged against College America in particular, for example. I don't want to do that at this point, particularly because there's a judicial issue here that is fundamental for Coloradans. That's why I want to focus on it right now. And that is, look, here in this state, we have every decade, every 10 years, the opportunity to vote on whether or not to retain a judge, judicial retention elections. And this is Judge Buchanan and Judge Ross Buchanan. And his reprimand by the Colorado Commission on Judicial Discipline, as we mentioned before, is private. We will never know what the basis for that reprimand was exactly, and or were, if there were multiple points for that reprimand. We just know that it's tied into what's going on here. At least we think that that's the case. I mean, do we know even that, that it has to do with your case?
Well, we think it does. I mean, the feedback that we received from the Commission on Judicial Discipline was that they issued a private reprimand. And in one of their letters to us, they did say that, you know, they did not find this delay acceptable.
Sure.
Now, I don't know if there have been other complaints or other issues with Judge Buchanan before the commission. Yeah. We don't have access to that material.
Well, but what we do know is that the judge issued his decision at 4:30 in the morning on the day that the reprimand was presented to him. We know that there was some sort of reprimand, but publicly we will not hear what the basis is. And that concerns me, that the public here in Colorado, and you can't even get that, as John Caldera pointed out in his Colorado Politics column last weekend, you can't even get that through a Colorado Open Records Act request. So the people of Colorado who will sometime soon enough get the opportunity to decide whether or not to retain Judge Buchanan will not have that information. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I agree with you. I mean, it doesn't seem to make sense where you have a structure and a system where the public, as it should, you know, has an opportunity to review a judge and decide whether that judge should continue to perform their duties. And that's what this system of democracy is all about. It's a foundational element of it. But on the other hand, how is the consumer, how are the citizens of Colorado supposed to intelligently know whether a judge is effective, whether they're serious, whether they're doing a good job, if any time a judge is reviewed or reprimanded or has a problem, that information is kept private and secret? It just doesn't seem to make sense. It's almost as if you're saying, we want you to go vote on candidates, but we're not going to share any information about those candidates with you.
Right.
How can you make an intelligent decision?
Again, we're talking with Eric Julin, CEO of the Center for Excellence in Higher Education, which owns College America, a nonprofit college in America that was operating in Colorado until September of last year. Just a few minutes left with you, Eric. And I mean, one thing, and I mentioned this before, that there were implications that came about as a result of Judge Ross Buchanan's ruling in this case in terms of some penalties from the accreditation agency and so forth that were directly tied in part to what happened here in Colorado in that regard. And that, I think, should be concerning to Coloradans as well, because if you have a judge making a decision and then that decision took 3 years just about to make, and it came about on the day that he was privately reprimanded for, it seems, for that delay, and we're not getting that information, of course, but and then that judge's decision on that day and the day he's reprimanded is then used as a basis for these other kinds of determinations. I mean, how was that from the perspective of your institution for planning purposes, for operational purposes, when then you were then facing more consequences as a result of this ruling?
Yeah, well, it was horrible. I mean, it was woefully disappointing. I mean, you know, it started a cascade of events, as you mentioned. And, you know, what's sad, I think, is, you know, the state of Colorado, for instance, has an oversight mechanism for colleges. You know, we had a state licensure. There's a state regulatory body. And all of our operations, all of our procedures, all of our faculty qualifications, all of our advertising, all of that stuff was reviewed on an ongoing basis by that entity. But here you have a judge who you know, inserts himself and supersedes any of that, that operational activity that we have, waits 3 years. And it was horribly detrimental to the colleges, which ultimately closed. You know, I can't say directly because of this, but certainly that cascading effect, that right. came from this ongoing delay and uncertainty was, you know, so we've had 200 employees that lost their jobs ultimately when the college closed, and thousands of students who over yeah. the years that we've been successfully training, you know, Colorado citizens don't have that option anymore.
Well, and I do want to be clear, of course, that there are a lot of issues. Again, I said we could talk about another time that have been leveled against College America, for example. But the fact that this judge's decision was then used in providing this the, this kind of a as a seminal part of the basis for making these kinds of decisions is what's particularly troubling to me. I mean, certainly we need to hear issues and concerns, but your point too is also bolstered, I think, by the previous judge, Judge R. Michael Mullins, who denied previous injunctions that the Colorado Attorney General had sought to stop College America in its tracks.
Yeah, I think that's what's the sad part. You know, after the lawsuit was filed in 2014, very shortly after, you know, we had a week-long hearing with Judge Mullins about preliminary injunctions, and Judge Mullins determined that there was no sufficient basis for those injunctions, and we really thought that that would be over. You know, that would be the end of this. But unfortunately, I believe that the Attorney General's office at that time had an ideological opposition toward private colleges and then doubled down to pursue it. But like you said, we won't go into, you know, all of that at this point. But, you know, we, I think as a company that runs colleges, we are very open to, you know, review, to criticism, to examining everything we do. And we've never professed that we do everything right. You know, and if we make a mistake, we fix it. And if in this matter, if a judge had done their work diligently, issued a decision, it would have given the college the opportunity to make corrections, make changes, and to adjust based on that judge's perspective. But to wait 3 years to issue a decision and to only do so after being scrutinized by a review commission, that's the travesty in all of this. And as I said, our colleges were in the process of closing even before the decision, because that uncertainty and that length of time is just, nobody can run an operation or a business with that hanging
right.
over them.
And that's where I think people, even if there are critics listening of College America who agree with many of the concerns and things that have been leveled, that we can all agree on, or should at least be able to agree on, is the way in which the judiciary operates should be much more transparent than this, and should be much more accountable than this. And not only that, but the law should be changed so that the Colorado Commission on Judicial Discipline Decisions should be at least CORD, Colorado Open Records Act, requested, and then obliged to provide some sort of a response in terms of the information that's requested. But that's not the case right now, unfortunately. And that's something that folks should keep in mind, especially when Judge Ross Buchanan goes up for retention, maybe even in 2022. All right, Eric Julin.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Yeah.
That's the issue at this point. Yeah. It's not a College America issue. It's about the judiciary in Colorado.
Yeah, yeah. And across the country. These kinds of things need to be changed
yeah.
all over the place. Eric Julin, CEO of the Center for Excellence in Higher Education. Thanks so much for joining us here on the Jimmy Sangenberger Show.
You bet, Jimmy. Thank you. Good to talk to you.
Once again, Eric Julin joining us, CEO of the Center for Excellence in Higher Education, which owns College America. And by the way, they have filed an expedited appeal request, so that they can get an answer before the end of this year and not have to wait another 3 years. I'm Jimmy Sangenberger. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be back on News Talk 710 KNUS.
Yeah!
Wrap it up and wind it down. The Jimmy Sangenberger Show, News Talk 710, KNUS. Indeed, the final segment. Little Robert Randolph helping to take us home here on the show. Great to be with you once again on this Saturday, the 9th of January edition of the Jimmy Sangenberger Show. Quick word on my conversation in the last segment with Eric Julin, CEO of the Center for Excellence in Higher Education, which is the nonprofit corporation that owns several different higher ed institutions, including College America, that are private, not-for-profit colleges. And that is, look, certainly there is some contention about College America and how it operates, hence court proceedings. And at some point, I hope we'll have Eric Julin on and we'll dive into that particular topic, some of those issues that have been raised in and out of court. But even if you were to grant opponents their concerns, even if you did that, I'm not granting them that, but even if you grant them that, that does not mean that a judge should be able to wait nearly 3 years to finally, after a four-week trial had taken place 3 years before, finally offer a ruling and say, this is my decision. And coincidentally, that ruling comes out on the day that you're going to be reprimanded, judge. What's up with that in the United States of America? First of all, you shouldn't be waiting that long. Second of all, you're hurting a business because that enterprise or that college, in this case, is unable to plan, unable to make determinations. What should we do? They ended up closing down last September their campuses here in Colorado. In part, not entirely, but in part, as a result of the judge dithering on a decision. Or perhaps was that even the point of the long delay? Just asking. And I do think it is important to note that there has been a political push against private colleges, and especially private for-profit colleges, for a long time by the left. And the Obama administration was certainly going after institutions like College America and trying to make it more difficult for them to exist. There was an ideological component to that. Betsy DeVos, the now outgoing Secretary of Education for President Trump, had a very different view on how higher ed should operate in this country. And I am worried. I will say this too. I am worried about what's next for higher ed under the Biden administration and what we're going to see with whomever he puts in as Secretary of Education. I think he announced that pick. I don't recall the person, if I'm correct, that he did, who he's nominated, going to be nominating. But nevertheless, there are a lot of different issues involved in this particular story. And I wanted to zero in on that point that John Caldera, the Independence Institute president, zeroed in on last weekend in his column, because I think he's spot on that in this country, in this state, and this isn't the only instance. He highlights some others. I'm aware of some others. In this state, there is a problem with judicial accountability, particularly in terms of letting the public know when judges have done something wrong or been reprimanded. Why in the world is this reprimand by the Colorado Commission on Judicial Discipline against Judge Ross Buchanan, why is that hidden from public view? Why can we not even Cora that? The judge is working on behalf of the people, right? Shouldn't we be able to Cora that? That is a Colorado Open Records Act request. and get details on what happened and why, what the motivation was, what the reasoning was behind the commission disciplining Judge Buchanan, what it said, what it was about. We should know, especially since we're the ones who vote to retain or not to retain. And that's, for the moment, key issue to keep in mind. Broader issues, too, on higher education in America and how the Biden administration is going to be, surely going to be going after private, for-profit, and not-for-profit colleges that they don't like. But more on that in the future. A couple other topics I want to talk about here in the final segment of the Jimmy Sengenberger Show. First, I didn't get to addressing earlier social media, big tech's onslaught against President Trump and conservatives. Folks on the right who are mainstream right-wing personalities, for example, like Dan Bongino, who's been banned from Twitter, and then said, oh, I'm permanently moving to Parler. President Trump saying, well, not saying, just being told, hey, you're out of Twitter permanently, permanent ban for President Trump from Twitter. The president of the United States, their argument going, he incited Wednesday's events, Wednesday's siege of the Capitol, and I can't really say that they're wrong in that regard, that the president encouraged with his language what ended up happening, but it doesn't mean that he specifically said, go in and attack the Capitol, I want you to do that. Moreover, he's the president of the United States, and that is a vehicle through which the public can get information from the president, where he can share his thoughts on the issues that are going on. And moreover, the supreme leader of Iran is still on Twitter in multiple languages. I don't even know the extent to which the Iranian people are able to access Twitter these days with their serious social media restrictions. In China, where there's also serious social media restrictions, I don't even know if they're allowed to access Twitter at all in China. Xi Jinping still on Twitter. A guy who literally has concentration camps with millions of Uyghur Muslims who are in slave labor camps and re-education camps. Literally. And that guy is still on Twitter? Well, gosh, I don't see how he would ever be removed from Twitter, because Twitter would like to be able to do business in China, right? See, here in the United States, President Trump can't do any sort of retribution. He's on his way out. He's actually an elected president of the United States who's now on his way out after failing to be successful in the election and the legal battles and the Electoral College. Say what you will about the underlying issues and how the elections were run and everything. He's on his way out. So they're like, who cares? He's out in 12 days. There's nothing he can do to us. There's no retribution that the president of the United States could even inflict directly on Twitter for banning him. Because we're a free country. Well, of course, big tech has a lot of restrictions that they're putting on who's able to exercise their freedom of speech. But ostensibly, we're still a free country, certainly by comparison to China and Iran, and those leaders are still on Twitter. I am waiting for Supreme Leader Khamenei and Chairman Xi Jinping of China to be removed from Twitter. I'm waiting for it. Not going to happen. Because they can go after a Republican president like Donald Trump, but not anybody else in leadership on the world stage. Stunning, but not surprising. Then you do have the attack on Parler. Now, I need to look into some of the details on this one, where the different app platforms like Google have banned Parler from their stores. So you're not able to download the Parler app, and I think probably you're going to have every platform. Apple, Amazon will be the last two. I think all of the platforms will end up deplatforming Parler. Not only is Twitter deplatforming the president, also Facebook, also Instagram, they deplatformed the president of the United States. But they're deplatforming from these app services, the phones and everything, the different apps, app stores, are removing Parler. Now, I saw something, I've seen two different things about this. One was because I think they're not able to delete literally threatening posts, like threatening violence. And that's why these companies are saying that. But they also have some more strict, according to Sean Davis, the founder of The Federalist, some more strict guidelines that they want Parler to follow. If it's just the former, you have to be able to delete the literal violent threats. I get it. I as a private company, I understand. I'm publicly traded, but still privately owned company. I can understand Apple and Google and Amazon or any of those app services, app stores, saying, nope, we're not going to be offering Parler because they're not removing violence. If that's the case, I get that, because those are private companies that are looking, privately owned companies that have particular rules that they need followed and basic things for their own protection. Because imagine if there was violence to come directly from something that was put on Parler, and then Apple were to be sued, for example. They may not have direct liability, but they didn't ensure to the best of their ability that it wasn't easily accessible for people to get in touch with those violent threats or the violent calls to action. But if they have some Orwellian, these are the specific things that we need every outlet to follow in order to do this, and they want you to sign on to some laundry list of ridiculousness and wokeness or whatever, then absolutely, like, they're way off base. And outrage is proper. Now, they cannot remove the website, Parler.com. So you can on your phone, I think, on your phone, you can access Parler by going to your web app, like Chrome, and typing in the website, logging in there. You could certainly do that in your computer. But man, oh man, regardless, I mean, this is really something to see just how far the big techers are going now at this point. See, I still don't know how you handle it, because I think if you actually remove Section 230, this would be even worse, because then they would literally, if you remove Section 230, then suddenly Facebook and Twitter and Instagram, they all become liable for everything. And then it will start shutting down free speech. They will actually go even further in blocking people and preventing them from expressing their views, because they suddenly will have more obligations, because they will be responsible. They will be considered publishers and responsible for everything stated on Twitter. Each and every one of us has a higher probability of being banned when Section 230 is gone. So I don't know how you do this, especially when we do have a capitalistic economy where businesses should be able to control what happens on their own platforms. Like, I'm not on board at this point still with government getting involved, because here's the big problem with government regulations. The minute government starts getting involved is the minute our freedoms become even more subjugated. And I say that because, look, the federal government actually has a monopoly on force. They have the power of force in a way that Google and Facebook do not in terms of our day-to-day lives. Now, if you want to use their platforms or have an app on their app store or what have you, then they have more control. But it is owned by them, the app store or the website services or what have you. Like, they are owned by those private companies. So there's at least this idea that I think is important in terms of who has the power of force. And if you give government this power in terms of regulation, that opens a whole can of worms of its own. Moreover, when you start getting in the business of government regulating something, you tend to see companies that are already existing in that space try to help write those regulations. I've talked about this for a few years now. For about 3 years now, I've been talking about how big tech wants more regulation. Facebook and Twitter and the rest want more regulation because they're the big guys in town. They can survive the restrictions and afford any new compliance costs in a way that the new guy, the Parlors of the world that are just trying to rise up, or the MeWe's or whatever, those companies don't have the same kind of capital available to comply with anything new that comes down from the government. So they want those kinds of regulations because it prices out the nascent competition. And they can also help write the regulations. So they can say, well, we really need this to happen, because if you're going to do security and make sure that we have, say, privacy protections for people, you really should do this. It's done the way they want it, and they can afford it, and it prices out their competitors. So this is why I'm not on board with the regulation. I think we need to speak up more and push back. Maybe more people might want to remove themselves from Twitter or Facebook or Instagram in protest. You can certainly do that. Then that starts hurting their bottom line when they're number of users goes down noticeably. That's something that could be done. But in terms of the government actions, I don't know. I will say, well, I do know. I don't think they should, because there's even more problems that can come from that. But at the same time, the idea of what they're doing here, deplatforming the president of the United States, letting the supreme leader of Iran, or the dictator of Iran and the dictator of China, letting them stay on, that's ludicrous. Absolutely ludicrous. This is wrong. But I have one other thing I want to talk about, and I've only got a couple minutes. We got a jobs report on Friday. The jobless rate stayed at 6.7%. But we saw 140,000 jobs lost in the month of December, particularly resulting from the increased lockdowns that we've seen across the country. Leisure and hospitality accounted for the bulk of the job loss, as 498,000, according to the Wall Street Journal, as states such as Washington, Michigan, and Pennsylvania banned indoor dining. And we in Colorado had that indoor dining ban just loosening up the very beginning of this past week. However, the job losses were offset by strong job growth in such industries as manufacturing, 38,000, construction, 51,000, and even retail, 120,500. Employment in residential construction grew by some 57,200 in 2020. So there were some sectors that did better than others, but the reality is that the lockdowns are slowing growth and making the situation much more difficult for the economy. Now, payrolls were revised up 135,000 for October and November, underscoring how we were seeing growth under President Trump with the economy open. the politicians that are forcing these shutdowns into place, forcing these significant restrictions on our lives, on our businesses, are undoing the economic gains that we saw in the late summer, early fall, and mid-fall. It is wrong on every level that this is continuing. And we're only going to see it get worse if they exacerbate the lockdowns. I don't think they will. Soon enough, they're going to start focusing on reopening. They're not going to want Biden to have bad jobs numbers month after month after month. But I also think it's important to remember that Joe Biden was the guy who Barack Obama had tapped as overseeing the summer of recovery. That recovery summer in 2010 that was a complete and utter flop. Joe Biden doesn't know how to grow an economy. He doesn't understand that it is the private sector that drives it. He doesn't. So while I expect things to pick up in the coming months, they're not going to be as much as they would with a president who understands the private sector, like Donald Trump, at the helm. That is it for us today here on the Jimmy Sangenberger Show. We'll be back next Saturday night with more engaging, intelligent talk, Sang style, here on News Talk 710 KNUS. Hang in there, everybody. We'll get through this tough time. And as always, may God bless America.